Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
And it is the Scott Servis Show, just like we do every single Tuesday. Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is the skipper himself, Scott Servis. Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you today?
Great. I have to say, we can't wait to talk to you about this past series you guys had against the Rays. I know we're going to spend some time looking ahead and looking at some guys and questions for them as well. But what a series and what a way to end, especially those three walk-offs. I mean, I can't say enough about it. What might have been your favorite moment from that stretch of games?
It was a lot of really good moments. I'm excited about the number of players that have stepped up and really contributing to help put us in those spots. So it's been everybody doing their job, you know, starting pitching. The bullpen has been really good. We played really sound defense. And, of course, the timely clutch hitting always makes it look good. So a lot of fun. And I think most exciting for me was, you know, the Sunday win. It felt like, I think we had 17, 18,000 fans there as we're getting closer to getting to 100%, you know, open the ballpark, and you could really feel it. You know, like the fans obviously following us and knowing that we've had a couple come from behinds, and yeah, it was great. It was a great feeling, great way to end that series with Shed Long hitting the walk-off grand slam.
Scott, watching that last week unfold, it really, there was something that felt a little bit different about it all. And I know that in the month of May, you had a bunch of walk-off wins, you had a bunch of extra inning wins, the one run wins, but this seemed different. And in my mind, this seemed like a step forward. What was perhaps a little bit more real or significant in what you were able to do last week?
I think for me, it's the consistency that we're showing, night in, night out. And I know we had some, like a lot of teams, we've taken our lumps at times this year. You get against a hot team, or you get in a bad stretch on a road trip, or you're dealing with, you know, a key injury, or certainly the COVID issue that we dealt with, and you know it can kind of snowball on you. But what excited me here over this last week was the consistency. You know, our starting pitching, I thought we had really good outings, throughout the course of, you know, this last week. Other than the Justin Dunn shortened outing, everybody else was right on top of their game. And when that happens, it kind of lines up everything else. Now your bullpen's in good shape. Your defensive club is on your toes. You're ready to make plays. I thought there was a number of outstanding defensive plays that really helped us, you know, through the last week or so. And then, like I said, our offense has really picked it up. I know we got off to a slow start this year, but, you know, in the month of June, I think we're probably in top 7 or 8 in the American League in what we've been able to produce. You know, we're getting more guys on base. Our approach, we're using the whole field much more consistently. So that's what excites me, because it's not just, hopefully, not just a little flash in the pan where we had a good week. Hopefully we can sustain it.
Scott, obviously J.P. Crawford's been one of those guys that has really stepped up at the plate, but who else has stood out to you in terms of their approach that has helped, you know, lift you guys to that level where you guys were able to have a great series against one of the best teams in baseball?
I think, you know, Ty France is really been hot and swinging a great bat. You know, he was missed some time with a wrist injury, and he had that flare up a little bit in the ball game yesterday. And we're waiting to see, our fingers crossed, that the tests are going to come back okay today. But he's been a guy that's been really picked it up for us offensively. I think the addition of Jake Bowers, you know, we claimed him, or we were able to trade for him, you know, from Cleveland. And this is a guy that is young. He fits age-wise with our group. It's a left-handed bat, and of course, he can play some outfield along with being a pretty accomplished first baseman. And, you know, the quality of his at-bats and using the whole field has really helped lengthen our lineup as well. And, you know, and Luis Torrens, nice shot in the arm when we called him. He swung the bat well. Shed Long's had some nice at-bats. Jake Fraley continues to get on base every night. One way or another, he's on base. So we've got a lot of guys that are contributing right now.
Scott, can you give us a little refresher? It's been a while since we have seen Shed Long, and then last year I don't think we really saw Shed Long. He had that off, you know, short season. What is it that we should, you know, when he is going good, what do you see from him, and what is kind of the hope for what he can be?
Yeah, Shed Long is, you know, he's got power in the bat, and, you know, he's not a big guy by, you know, stature or anything, but he can drive the ball, and when he's making good swing decisions, like a lot of our guys, but probably even more so with Shed, when he's swinging at the right pitches, good things are going to happen, and that's what we're seeing. I thought his at-bat the other day against a really tough reliever, Castillo's got as good a slider in the game as anybody. you know, he had a good at bat. You know, he didn't get up there, try to do too much, just trying to square a ball up. And when he stays in that mode, he's going to be pretty tough out in our lineup. So, you know, keeping Shed versatility defensively is also important. You know, as Dylan Moore's done a great job at second base defensively, so being able to put Shed in the outfield, and you'll still see Shed in the infield some as well, but, you know, having the versatility with a number of guys has really helped keep us fresh and keep them all in the lineup.
Skip, you certainly weren't overlooking the opponent at the time. You weren't overlooking the Twins, but Shannon did ask you about the challenge that was coming up that weekend with the Rays and seemed very excited about that unique opportunity. And one of the things that stood out to me is that you see your club that you are managing, the competitive fire that they have to rise to those occasions. Is that one of the fun things that you are looking at as everybody's talking about rebuilds and everybody's talking about individual performances, but building and establishing that winning culture to rise to those occasions?
It really is. And again, I was looking forward to the series. You know, I think the Rays have a very quality opponent. They made it to the World Series last year, and I kind of wanted to see where we were at and how we stacked up. And yeah, I think there's a couple different ways of looking at it. And, you know, this team for me, and I've often said it and I'll continue to say it, they love to compete. There's other teams that I've, you know, been a part of as a player or around as a coach or a manager that just like to win. There's a difference. Everybody likes to win. This team really loves to compete. And that excites me because you can't control the wins all the time. But if you go out and compete and you're making good decisions, your head's into the game, you're focused, you know, a pitch at a time, you know, you keep doing that day after day after day, good things will happen. The wins kind of take care of themselves. So that's what I really like about this group. You know, we have a lot of young guys, have a lot to prove, and they really do like to compete. And that excites me. So when you just focus on competing, it doesn't really matter who you're playing against. You know, this is going to be a good test for us here. Colorado comes in for a couple days. They're healthier now than they have been. They've got Trevor Story back. They've got a good lineup. So it'll be a, you know, off day yesterday. We've got to get refocused tonight, get ready to go out and compete again.
Skip, that's exactly where you led me right to my next question for you. Is I've been a part of teams where we've had great moments. We rise to the occasion. We have this great win, and we're riding that high, and then you have a disappointing game the next game because you weren't able to refocus and regroup. How important is that for you to drive that message home as you guys get prepared for the Rockies?
It's really important. Understand, you know, it's not football. It's not once a week. You know, we play 162 games, and there's going to be some highs and some lows and some nights. But, you know, you need to stay focused. You know, every pitch, defensively, offensively, stay into the game. And, you know, I think, you know, we'll let our players know, you know, the Rockies just swept the Padres here last week. You know, they have been playing good baseball. The Padres is a team that we did not do well against, you know, earlier in the year. So they're playing good baseball, and we have to respect that. And I think we're playing really good baseball. So hopefully guys come in refreshed after an off day, really fired up and ready to get after it here in this short two-game series.
I got a little bit of a twofer question, but both pitchers, so I hope that I can squeeze these questions both in here. What do you hope to see on these back-to-back nights from both Flex and Sheffield?
Yeah, you know, Flex has been really consistent for us the majority of the year, and but last time out might have been his best outing of the season he's had for us. He had a really good cutter. His changeup is a pitch that's really played into his arsenal. It's got a ton of action on it and really effective against the left-handed hitters. So I'd love to see him get us 6-7 innings tonight. You know, with Sheff has been a little bit up and down this year and trying to get some things going in the right direction with him. I think, you know, getting the command is one issue with Sheff and continuing to get into good counts. You know, we've really focused on, you know, he needs to drive that fastball to the glove side. It really helps open up his changeup for him against all the right-handed hitters that are typically in the lineup against him. So, you know, Sheff, I know, really wants to get it righted. He feels like he's not, you know, carrying his load, I guess, so to speak, with the starting pitcher group. He's certainly capable of it. We saw it last year. And sometimes, just like hitting, you know, the pitching side of it, you get on a roll and all of a sudden you make that pitch and you turn it into a big double play, and now the positive vibes start coming again. And that's all he really needs. Have go out there and really take an inning at a time, but put up 5 or 6 solid innings and then continue to build from there. So both these guys are very capable of going out and giving us quality outings. We've seen it in the past and looking forward to it here in the next couple days again.
Okay, since Stacy got a two-parter, I'm going to take a two-parter here too.
Everyone gets a two-part
Everybody,
question.
Two-parters all around the table. kind of baseball and kind of not baseball. First of all, yesterday, just absolutely beautiful Seattle day off. You don't get very many of those. Very curious as to what you did on your day off. And B, if at any point in the day off yesterday you took a look at what was going on in some of the games around baseball and how they were doing those little checks of the pitchers when they came off the field and how that's going to look for you guys. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, first, the day off. That's our first day off at home all year. And we sit on June 20th. So we don't have many because typically we're traveling on those off days, you know, over to the East Coast or into the Midwest. So yesterday was pretty awesome. And took a little hike over in Issaquah, which I'm so sore today. Even our dog is sore. That was that kind of hike. So, and then got a chance to get in the lake a little bit and spend some time on the water. So yesterday was a great day personally. But I did happen to take a look at a few games last night on TV and, you know, checking out what the umpires were doing as the starting pitcher walked off the mound and, you know, consequently, you know, relievers later in the game. So it'll be a little bit different. Our guys are all aware of what's coming, that they will get checked randomly throughout the game here, you know, for the near future at least, just to kind of clean up some of the foreign substance issues that's been going on in our game.
How big of a difference is that going to be for some of these pitchers? Do you guys, are you concerned about any of your guys? I know it sounds like such a small thing, but I know pitchers like to be in their own mind, their own framework, and especially when they're walking off the mound. Is there any of those guys that you're looking at and going, oh, I don't know if they're going to like that too much?
I mean, it's just part of the game. You've got to adjust. I think when, you know, all of the warnings and things started coming out about this about a week ago, I think pitchers around the league quickly started to know that they're going to have to adjust. They're going to have to back off maybe some of the stuff they were using or whatnot, because nobody wants to get suspended and certainly hurt your team for 10 days by playing a man short. So, you know, you see it around the league. I think a number of players have backed off, you know, maybe what they're using, and whether they like getting checked or not, they really have no say in the matter. This is something that's coming down from the commissioner's office, and we'll follow the rules.
So you know your guys, Scott. The umpires, who is the most intense pitcher in a situation coming off after a third out are they going to face in your staff?
That's a good one.
Who's going to make a problem?
We've got a few. I could see Marco Gonzalez really getting not real happy about it. He's probably the one who might snap on somebody as far as that goes. But again, the guys know it's coming. It's just part of it. And try not to make too big a deal. Go ahead and get them out. Walk off the mound. They're going to check you after the half inning, and then we'll move on with the game from there.
Last question, at least for me. I'm just going to stick with the pitchers here. I know that he hasn't just pitched or isn't coming up here, but what's the next step for Logan Gilbert? I mean, where do you want to see him develop, at least in his next outing or two?
I love where Logan's at. And I think anybody around our team, I know our pitching coaches are excited about the improvements he's made. And it's really been more of just a matter of getting comfortable at this level, understanding that the routines are a little bit different. You know, obviously new team, first time in the big leagues, but I think he's adapted and adjusted really well. He learned quickly that, you know, he's going to need to get his secondary pitches going or the league was going to hammer his fastball. But now that he has his secondary pitches going and he's using them more frequently, especially the changeup, for me the changeup has a chance to be just lights out. And I think eventually he's going to start throwing at the right-handed hitters as well. Right now it's pretty much just against the lefties, but when he starts mixing it against the righties as well, it's really going to allow his fastball to play up even more. He's learned that. He's starting to loosen up a little bit. He's very serious. He takes his craft very seriously. For me, Logan is an old soul. He's a young player, but he's an old soul. And I say that as a compliment. He just takes his craft very serious and his routine very serious. And not much is going to get him to get off the rails. He believes in who he is, and he understands who he is as a pitcher. So sky's the limit for him. As you can tell, I'm really excited about what he brings to our team. And every time he takes the ball and goes to the hill, I feel really good about him getting us 5 or 6 innings and just keeping us in the game. And he's only going to continue to get better, in my opinion.
All right. He is Mariners manager Scott Service, joins us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. for the Scott Service Show. Thanks, Skip.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, Shannon, let's look ahead to this 2-game series Seattle has against the Rockies. They're a bit of a weird team. Awful road record, worst road record in baseball, I think 5-27. Pretty decent at home, though. I think they're 6th or 7th in average, which I know is a basic stat, but they can at least at times hit the ball, make contact, get on base. They just haven't been a big team with home runs, and they obviously haven't showed much results of anything at at least in terms of their record. So there's a fair reason to expect both that the Mariners can go out there and sweep this short series, but also that they can get some challenges thrown their way. So what can we expect specifically with this Rockies team in this series?
Well, I'm hoping for the opportunity. They've won 5 games on the road this season. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping, and the Mariners obviously hot and rolling right now, particularly with Flexen coming off of such a strong outing that he is coming off of. So you're hoping you can get that one and then get a little bit greedy with game 2. But Sheffield has been a question mark. It has been a struggle for him, and he is trying to work through some things right now. So, you know, that game a little bit more, I think, of a wild card when you look at it.
What's Ben Sheffield's issue, really? I mean, I know we asked Scott about it in terms of, hey, what do you want to see from him? And he said, hey, I just want to see more command, and
right.
said that he feels Sheffield doesn't feel like he's carrying his weight with the rest of the starting pitchers. But what's been the issue?
Well, that's an interesting, that might be part of the issue right there. Sheffield is a guy that has gotten into his head a little bit over the last couple of years, and that's when he has struggled the most, you might remember. And he knows that he's in a battle right now, and he kind of has pointed out that he's faced worse. I'm so distracted by the colors in here today. I mean, you guys look like a bag of saltwater taffy.
We are enjoying the summer season.
I mean, Curtis and I are in black.
Yeah.
All right, Curtis.
I'm matching Shannon.
Never mind.
It's just throwing me off. So bright. 2019, when he was supposed to come up, he was supposed to have just a short stay at AAA, and it just blew up on him. And part of that might have been the baseball that they were using in 2019. If you recall, the PCL in particular, it was just getting hammered. They sent him down to AA, and just the pressure came off, and he all of a sudden was a different pitcher. And, of course, the next year he changed his game drastically when he ditched the four-seamer for the two-seamer. And that worked very well for him last year. It was a two-month season. So I think that kind of probably what he is dealing with right now is he had that success last year, but it was such a smaller sample for him. And I think there might be some questions in his mind what he's doing. Command A, absolutely important. He's got to get inside if he wants to open up outside. He's not a guy that's got 4 pitches, and it's a matter of which 3 are working tonight. It's more of a 3 pitch, and you kind of have to have all 3. And another thing that you have to have is that location. He hasn't always had that. So I think for him, I think kind of the mental side of it, and right now it's piling up a little bit, and that he isn't helping the club, or he sees himself as not helping the club, is something that he needs to just kind of get by. And I've wondered how they would handle this. I would think at some point you could skip a turn if there was something specific. When you're talking about the command issue, it would appear that that's a mechanic. I know that they thought that there were some things with the timing the last time out and thought they had fixed it, and that did not go well. So I'm kind of wondering if we see at some point, I don't think you see him sent down. I think these are things that he needs to figure out against big league hitters, but I'm wondering how much of a step they take back and just kind of step by step by step with him, and perhaps kind of shorter outings and trying to get him some success so he can then take off the next time out.
Yeah, that'll definitely be something to keep an eye on. And the next thing to keep an eye on is, as we talked about earlier today, and we talked about this with you yesterday, is that you had the feeling over the weekend, right? And you caught yourself.
I don't know who that was.
This is the turning point. This is the opportunity for the Mariners to turn that corner. And I asked Skip if he felt like it was going to be a challenge for them to turn around and not have a letdown, so to speak, against the Rockies. It reminded me that it's not football and it's a different mentality. It's a different sport, obviously. But I still very much view this Rockies series, these 2-game series, as an opportunity for them to continue to build off of what they did versus the Rays. How do you feel about it?
Well, you have to take each game as they come. I mean, this is where all of the cliches come out, but it is true in baseball. When you play every day, one game should not derail you. Even 2 games should mm-hmm. not derail you. So if you don't get what looks on paper that looks like it could be a good matchup, if you don't get that, and you heard Scott was kind of hedging against that a little bit. They've
right.
got players back. This is a good team there.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to set them up for anything. I do think that they put that away. I think that if they do get those 2, I think you see them continue to ride the wave a little bit. But as long as they go into their next road trip, and now you look, let's build off of this homestand. You had a miserable road trip before. Let's take it on the road and go from there. As long as you continue to see the good approaches, the good plate appearances, and not just one here and one there, but stringing them together,
mm-hmm.
I think you can continue to move forward. So no one series at that point is critical.
So what you're saying is it's not one series. It's more of basically the peaks and valleys that we've seen with this team at the beginning of the year thus far. We want to see those decrease.
We want to get off the roller coaster.
Yeah.
And that's what I wrote in my piece. And the first 2 months were nothing but a roller coaster. We were throwing our hands up how many times? And then they come right back and you're like, seriously? Okay. They're okay. But you can't really gain any momentum off of that. And I'm not sure how much at that point was real. I think the ultimate question is, are you playing good baseball? And if you can get off of that roller coaster and get on more of a straight road and you're dealing with gentle curves, as I said in my post, rather than the plummet and the plunge, I think then you are in the right kind of frame of let's move this forward. And that is dependent on playing good baseball. And they are. And Scott pointed to this. They have upped their offensive numbers in the month of June. Mm-hmm. It's more to mid-pack, which, well, that's okay, isn't it? But, man, from where they were, yes, oh,
yeah,
that
they were
is.
Last
take
in
that
average
all day.
OPS yes. on-base percentage.
Right.
Literally anything.
Now they're eighth and ninth in the American League and in right. WAR and in WRC+, kind of that all-encompassing stat. So that is a victory. So if you can continue that, the other thing that I've been keeping an eye on is run differential. And, you know, they were, you know, a minus 60, a minus 65, a minus 70. And a few years ago, I got so fooled by it. I was watching the team every day, and they just had an absolutely horrific run differential. I'm like, well, this is different. I can see them. I know that they're good, and they know how to win, and this, and this, and this. And then was just crushed down. It's like, nope, the run differential is real. It means you're just kind of heading for that fall if you're over exceeding it. Well, in the month of June, their run differential is just minus 4 right now. That's significant.
Shannon, we just have like 30 seconds left here, but I have to squeeze in this question because we did just get some Mariners roster moves. We have Evan White being transferred to the 60-day IL.
No.
That is retroactive. He's eligible to come off 7/13. They've also claimed Jake Hager, looks like a utility guy, infield, outfield, off of Milwaukee.
Of course.
Yeah. So what's your immediate takeaway from this? I guess specifically, obviously the name people paying attention to, Evan White.
Well, if it is retroactive, I mean, let's face it, he was going to get a full stretch of rehab games, you know, probably 3 weeks worth, I would think. So if it is retroactive, and if he can come back on 7/13, this is just a paper move, okay, a roster move.
Yeah. All right. She is Shannon Dreyer, Mariners insider for 710sports.com. The column she was just talking about up on 710sports.com right now. Shannon, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. I'll wear my pastels,
Shannon,
next week.
Yes, good.
All right. We are jumping to the NFL next, taking a look at some headlines that's coming your way on Jake and Stacey. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
NFL headlines. NFL headlines.
Here we go, Jake.
Jake, why are you rubbing your temple
like
that?
Why do you look so bothered?
No reason. No reason at all.
I
had like a couple sleepies in my eye. I just need to rub out while you guys were doing that great intro right there for NFL headlines.
In the NFL today, Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib becomes the first active NFL player to openly come out as gay. He announced this in an Instagram video yesterday. I think this is big news around the NFL. I understand that plenty of people, and I was seeing this comment all over Twitter, are like, who cares? What's the big deal? I think that this is a big deal to a lot of people. It's not just people in the LGBTQ community who feel often not welcome, particularly in sports, and particularly in football, whether it's locker rooms or on the field, whatever it is. I also think it matters to people who just want to see, in general, a more inclusive atmosphere in sports. We all know how healthy sports can be for you mentally, physically, emotionally, when it is a place where people feel welcome. And so let's make it a place like that.
Yeah, I also think that when you look at Nassib, why is it a big deal? Well, because it's the first.
I don't know what it's like.
To have somebody that is openly gay on an active NFL roster right now who has been playing, and there have been NFL players who are gay that have played in the NFL but have not felt comfortable enough to speak openly about it. And this is the first time that we're seeing this happen, and I'm hoping that this is the NFL shows that they are ready for this, and that in the past it has not necessarily been the case, but I think that you're seeing a point in time where they will. And I think that, you know, Nassib will be received well, and I think that he'll be very much accepted within his own locker room, within the Las Vegas Raiders, excuse me. And when it comes to something like this, and Nassib said this in his video, that at some point, for all those that say, who cares, this mm-hmm. is, you know, this is really isn't news, that you won't have to make this a big deal, and it won't be big headlines, because it will just be open and accepting. And so I think that always, when it's the first of its kind, is always going to be a topic of conversation.
I think it's always important, and I think it's important equally when, like, you hear about a woman being interviewed for a head coaching position, and sometimes you'll have people say, who cares? It's not a big deal. It actually does matter. Representation is hugely important. And yeah, we all want to get to a point where it doesn't matter, but for now it does. And it's important to be able to say, this person is making inroads here.
Jake, you made the point that this is the first time in NFL history that a player has been openly gay in the league. Not just the first time. The league celebrated their 100th anniversary 2 years ago. Think of that. 100 years. We're on year 102 now. Mm-hmm. And this has never happened before. Just think of the thousands of players that have come through the league. Like, it's historic.
I don't know. I think it takes a lot of guts to be able to do, considering a lot of, like, the blatant homophobia that, like, I've been seeing in responses. And, you know, like, I'm just... only room for positivity on this show right now. Only positive vibes for us. So good for you, Carl. And that's awesome that you felt comfortable enough to do that. And I hope that I agree with him. I hope it becomes a place, the league, where
I
don't have to do videos.
I want to make it clear that, look, when it comes to this and when you say representation matters, to me it matters if somebody feels like they can be truly themselves.
Yeah.
It's not to say that we have to have this in our league. And in order for it to be a success, but what it should be is a place that is inclusive. If someone is gay, they should feel like they should be able to be open and honest about it rather than hiding who they are from the rest of the league because of fear of whether they're being judged or whether they'll be run out of town. You know, those types of things, that matters. So when you say representation matters, I think it matters that somebody can be themselves, truly themselves, and it be positive and not be a negative. And obviously, for all those kids that you have mentioned before earlier in this show, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, kids
suicide rates
yeah. with the LGBTQ community, I mean, it's impactful.
All right, next story here. 49ers, Trey Lance, and Jimmy G battling it out as training camp gets underway. That by Nick Wagner. Headline on ESPN. Nick Wagner, fantastic interview. He's joined us for the huddle, and I am fascinated to hear about how this quarterback battle goes throughout the season. The reason I phrase it that way, Jake, is I don't know if we're going to have a decisive QB1 in week one. I don't know if they're going to go with Trey Lance, some limited experience in essentially just 1 year of college ball for like a full season. Outside of that, essentially had one game the following year and then didn't have that season. So you, though, are pretty confident that it could be Trey week one. What are our betting odds right now? Are you guys taking that bet? Are you taking that wager that Trey Lance is QB1 for San Francisco week one?
If I have to bet, if I have to wager, I wouldn't be surprised if you see the Chicago Bears approach when it comes to Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy G, that maybe they roll out Jimmy G for week one, week two, and ease Trey Lance into it. But I'm still going to hold firm on my initial comments that you don't trade up for the third overall pick just to sit this guy. And I think that Trey Lance is going to be given every single opportunity to earn the job. And I expect him to be the quarterback starting day one for the San Francisco 49ers. But a big part of that equation, Stacey, is going to be how Trey Lance handles not only training camp, but how he performs in preseason. That will be vital for him to prove to Kyle Shanahan and to the rest of the team that he is ready to go.
Speaking of Bill Barnwell, we read earlier his ratings 1 through 32 for all NFL offseasons, or for each offseason that each NFL team had. Seahawks came in at number 17, so we talked about that. Bill also has another article where he writes about the top passing, receiving, rushing, and sack records or interception records that could be broken this year. For passing records, he has Patrick Mahomes as his favorite to surpass Peyton Manning's single-season passing yards record. I would also bet on Patrick Mahomes doing that. How close do we think Russell Wilson can get? The reason I asked, Jake, is this becomes instead a question about what kind of offense do we think Seattle's going to have?
I would say that when you talk about their... I would say that when it comes to their situation, I think that it could be, I don't know, I would say positive. I mean, what do you think?
how close I think he can get to that. Yeah. I would almost prefer if he didn't. Like, I think that it's the record would be well over 5,000 passing yards. I would be completely fine with Russell Wilson falling short of that, because in my mind, it would mean that they are finding ways to utilize the run game. I don't want a 50-50 split at all, but I think that I'd like for them to be able to find ways to use a lot of weapons in their total offensive attack.
And that's why I say positive, because for Russ, 5,000 yards, it doesn't matter unless it matches up with production. So it's great to have 5,000 yards, but if you're not putting points up on the board and winning games, it doesn't matter, right? So that is more indicative of what I look at for Russell Wilson. Is Russell Wilson throwing touchdown passes, and are they winning games? And over the last 3 years, there's been nobody that's thrown more touchdown passes than Russell Wilson in terms of consecutive 30. He has thrown for 3 years in a row. He's the only quarterback in the league to throw over 30 touchdown passes. That is a big mark for any quarterback in this league. And I think for Russ to continue on that trend, I think would be extremely positive, and I think that he has opportunity to go back-to-back 40-plus touchdowns, and I have high marks for Russell Wilson this year with the new direction under Shane Waldron and this group being farther down the road.
All right, you've got questions, we've got answers. We're turning it over to you guys. Get your questions in now for What I Need to Know to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, whatever it is. Text it now, What I Need to Know, coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions into the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Let's go to this one. This person has a question about Jamal Adams from the 206. What I Need to Know. Shouldn't Jamal Adams' sack numbers be taken into context? When he gets a sack, it's because we were sending 5 rather than 4. Doesn't it seem like his sack numbers aren't as impressive as a defensive lineman's?
Okay, so let me ask you this. So if we sent 5 and a defensive lineman or a defensive end gets a sack because of that, do you reward them for that? Is that still as impressive? Or should we put an asterisk by that?
It's a good question. I think this person is also assuming that potentially the majority of sacks an edge rusher may get won't be as a result of a blitz package.
It really just depends on the scheme that you play in, right? And so for the traditional Seattle Seahawks, they typically only rush 4. In their heyday, they only rush 4. So therefore, yeah, I could see where you would have that perspective. There's other defenses, like you look at TJ Watt, and he comes from a defense in the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're a 3-4 defensive scheme that are known for their exotic blitz packages and try to create confusion, and yet he still gets to the quarterback at a very high rate. Do you knock him because he comes from that type of scheme? The answer is no. So generating those numbers are still impressive no matter how they come. Are they as impactful? That's a deeper conversation, because as we saw last year, there were times where Jamal Adams was getting to the quarterback, yet they were giving up still a ton of yards. Why? Because the back end was not stable enough, and they were not, they were very loose in coverage and not firm. So it all has to work together in order for it to be as successful and for those sack numbers to really, truly be as impactful as it would be a defensive end with a 4-man rush. And so I understand where they're coming from, the 206. I get where you're coming from. But at the same time, Jamal Adams' 9.5 sacks, they were impressive no matter how you slice it.
Someone from the 253 texting in to say they won the genuine Autoglass Avisa card from last week. Thanks.
Nice.
Jamal? Shout out.
Jamal, is that
no,
you?
No, it's not Jamal Adams. We were trying to pay, help him out with some fines for missing minicamp. But no, it is someone from the 253. Shout out to 253. Congrats on that one. Speaking of 253, there's another one from 253. No, sorry, this one 425. It's summer. It's going to be in the 90s this weekend. Picture it this way, you guys. What I Need to Know. I have a question for you three. Let me paint a picture. You hear a high-pitched music coming from the outside. You look out your window. You see in all caps, ice cream truck. You sprint outside, cash in hand. What do you buy? Ninja Turtles head? SpongeBob? Mm-hmm. What's it going to be?
Strawberry shortcake bar.
Woo! Wow. Yeah. What a call.
I think
it is.
The best option, I would always get an ice cream sandwich.
Here comes the worst.
No, or a drumstick.
For the day.
Or I always wanted like the chocolate or like the
Choco Taco.
Ooh, Choco Taco's incredibly underrated. Yeah, what's wrong with Choco Tacos?
In the heat with an ice cream truck?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
So you'd rather have the SpongeBob melty sideways face with gumball eyes?
Any of them that had the gumball eyes was always the best.
Oh, come on.
Whether it's Ninja Turtles, whether it's Captain America. We had that a couple years ago at the Steilacoom Farmers Market. Jackson and I did. Any way you slice it, that is going to be the best popsicle that you could get outside of, Curtis, as you said, the strawberry shortcake one. No doubt, hands down, that's what you go for. Because how often do you get them? You don't.
I will say, I like any kind of like chocolate or more decadent ice cream 99% of the time. The second it gets over 90, all you want is something that's like juice or water. You're just so hot. You can't focus on it. So I'll say that. Someone said, I have to agree with the geriatric ice cream sandwiches all day long. Hey, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's Spumoni or something.
What I need to know... this person said, Jake, I'm starting to not believe you that you did American Ninja Warrior.
I'm sorry. I don't know when the episode is going to be.
It was American Ninja Warrior airs every Monday night.
Last Monday night.
It was on at 9 because of the U.S. Olympic trials at 8.
Yes.
And you were not on there.
I believe they've
had the kid tournament so far.
They have. So there's still a lot of episodes left throughout. I think it's going to run throughout the entire summer. So just be patient. Hang in there. If I get a heads up on it, I will let you know. But... just got to be patient. I did do it. I have the proof. I promise I did it.
Let's see. What I need to know, is there any room for a guy like Golden Tate on this Seahawks roster? Would he fit in?
No. I don't think there's room for a guy like Golden Tate. And it's not to say that there's anything wrong with Golden Tate other than the idea is he going to be a major X factor for your offense? Is he going to take over that third receiver spot that is supposed to be going to your second round pick in Dwayne Eskridge? I don't think that answer is yes, and I think that we reminisce on the good old days of Golden Tate. Could he be a contributor as a fourth receiver for a team out there? Yes, but I don't think that he's going to be a major impactful player that some may believe.
Now, this is an underrated one, the 206, in terms of the ice cream you would get off the ice cream truck, the Nestle chocolate chip cookie sandwich.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Underrated.
Sometimes the cookie can get too frozen and it's hard to bite through.
Yeah, but I think you're putting a little too much weight into like the basic kind of like SpongeBob, like the cartoon character ones that are just kind of like non-distinct fruit flavored ice cream.
How dare you?
I said what I said.
How dare you?
Well, what I need to know, this person who won the Genuine Auto Glass Visa card says, if Jamal Adams wants to come pick up the gift card, tell him to meet me at Sparks Stadium in Puyallup, Jake. Do you want to facilitate that handoff?
I'll pass that along to him. I'll let you know what I hear back from Jamal, and should hear back shortly, so we'll let you know.
What I need to know, Curtis, someone wanted to know how you and Brenna got together.
Yeah, we used to work the same events together. We were...
romantic.
Yeah, Seahawks Weekly, which then became Hawks Live. We both worked that. We worked a few of the Edgar's Cantina broadcasts, and so through that, we struck up a friendship, and then from there, it blossomed into full-blown marriage with a kid.
Yeah!
So,
wow! Yeah.
Hey, so Curtis, we did have a listener... text us in yesterday about advice for approaching somebody in person.
Yeah.
Good on you, by the way. Asking somebody, a coworker out. How did you
ask Brenna out?
So she kind of like dropped a lot of hints. And then
I was not picking
him up at all. And then I finally got a clue. We had another coworker who came up to me and was like, hey, Brenna likes you. Do something about it.
What'd you do?
And I was like, okay, I'll do something about it. And I've done quite some things about it.
Wait, did you ask her out to like go to a restaurant or something?
We went out. Our first date was just getting drinks at a bar.
Beautiful.
Getting some apps. And then from there... We went mini golfing one time, and then...
That's a great first date recommendation. Yeah. If that listener from yesterday is still listening and you have not asked this girl I feel like mini golfing could be fun. It's going to be a hot weekend.
Icebreaker for sure.
And if you guys end up getting married, please invite us, all three of us, to the wedding. Yeah. I feel like
you're ordained, aren't you?
I am ordained.
Jake can marry you guys.
I can officiate. I've done it once, and I can say I didn't ruin it. So that was very positive.
Bar's low.
The bar, I wouldn't say low. I did low-key knock it out of the park, but it was... I'm available.
All right. That'll do it for us today. He's Jake Heaps, and he's Curtis Rogers. I'm nailing it. I'm Stacey Ross. Curtis, stop staring at me.
Just end the show, Stacey.
Bye.